You're listening to Vet Candy.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Palmer. Thanks for joining me today. This is the Desk Winch Confessions, and tonight is a very, very special episode because it is our Halloween special. But first, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm Caitlin, aka the Desk Winch. A Desk Winch, it's a profession very similar to a veterinary receptionist, only better. But tonight, we're not too worried about Karens and Chads. We're going to focus more on ghouls and goblins and blood and all that great stuff. So today, I am so excited to introduce Dr. Maria Jose Navarrete. Dr. Navarrete is a veterinary anatomic pathologist. She's learned and studied in several countries throughout her career, including Chile and Germany. She was awarded the Marie Curie Fellowship, which is kind of a big deal. She's currently an assistant professor at Ross University School of Veterinary Medicine in St. Kitts and Nevis. Her research lines relate to anatomic pathology using a One Health approach to antibiotic resistant and emerging diseases in terrestrial and aquatic animals, domestic and wildlife, then lately to different invasive species and corals. Not only is she a badass science-y doctor, she actively participates in several bilingual projects to bring science closer to the public, especially to kids. She's also participated in the coloring book, The Colorful Faces of Veterinary Medicine, from the Vets of All Colors initiative. Dr. Maria, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Caitlin. It's, I'm so much looking forward to our Halloween special today.
Yes, it's so exciting. So tell me, what exactly is a pathologist? Like, just kind of in general, what's a pathologist?
Yeah, so a pathologist is, it could be a human or a veterinarian. In my case, I'm an anatomic pathologist. Veterinary and anatomic pathologist, and we focus on diseases and how diseases and the mechanisms are changing and giving us some information regarding the tissue. So we can see changes that can be observed macroscopically, so with the naked eye, so grossly, and then are some changes that we can only see in the cells. And those are kind of the microscopic changes. And each of those changes is related to a cause and is related to a specific mechanism. So those are the things that we study. So it's kind of a STEM specialty. So basically it's with, you know, histopathology, but it's linking, you know, the very basic knowledge to the clinics and to all the applied knowledge. So it's a very, it's usually like when you have a tree, it's basically the trunk of the tree. So all the basic science are the roots, and then you have all the clinics up in the upper, in the branches. So pathology is connecting that.
Right. And I know there's different kinds of pathology, just for our listeners. There's anatomic pathology, which is study of tissues, organs. Cytopathology, which is cells, everything related to cells. Forensic pathology, which is like autopsies and like legal pathology of tissues and stuff. And then there's molecular, which is your DNA, RNA, sequence, all that good stuff. So there was a study that showed that lay people considered pathologists creepy. Are you creepy, Dr. Maria?
I'm not creepy, but I have been called creepy because, yeah, we talk a lot about death and we talk about, you know, like organs, and sometimes these corpses are not in their best condition, right? So we talk about nasty stuff, and sometimes people do not get to understand why we are so motivated. I've been asked so many times why I decided to go into pathology if it is such a disgusting specialty. And I really enjoy it. I'm not creepy at all. I really enjoy it.
No, you don't seem creepy at all. I love nasty stuff myself. I personally love it.
It goes beyond the nasty stuff. So the nasty stuff is just one part. I really enjoy that it becomes kind of a challenge, basically. We have to find out why the animals are sick or why they are dying. And I think that is, it has kind of two things. One, sometimes when the rest of the animals are alive, you have to figure out this puzzle really fast in order to help the other animals. But if the animal is already dead and you have to figure out why they are dead, that is also very stimulating, and it's changing all the time. And I get to learn lots, so I love it.
That's so cool. Do you have a favorite organ like to handle? And
the brain. Absolutely. That is my favorite ever. So I did my PhD in neuropathology when I was in Germany, and I fell in love with it. It's very challenging because we don't know a lot about the brain, but it's one of the organs I love to study. I also love to manipulate it. It's inside a very hard cage, our skull. So yeah, it's challenging, but I love to study, yeah, the nervous tissue and especially the brain.
Sure. Have you ever done like rabies testing? Is that part of what you do?
Yes, I have done. In Chile is rabies free for dogs. So bats are actually the reservoir. And here in St. Kitts, we are considered unknown. So there is basically nobody has tested a bat or a dog positive. But because there have not been like large studies, the stage is classified as unknown. So yeah, I have performed a couple of those testing.
That's really cool. So for any of our listeners that don't know, rabies testing is they test the brain tissue to see. What are you looking for?
So we are looking for the virus, actually. So we can test for antigens against the virus. So the antigen is basically one very specific molecule against it. Before, we were searching for specific marks or signs in the brain tissue that could let us know that it was positive for rabies. But now with the new molecular techniques, we can test for the antigen.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy Radio delivers world-class content with engaging voices and inspirational messages curated by a network of top influencers and experts. Stream 24/7 at myvetcandy.com.
That's awesome. I remember watching Cujo as a kid, you know, the Stephen King movie where the dog has rabies and he kills everybody. That is the first movie that I've ever seen where I wanted the dog to die. I was like, somebody, please get rid of this dog. It's horrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a nasty disease, especially for humans. So there is a huge, you know, campaign for vaccinations of dogs, but because those are the main reservoir across the world. And yeah, it's a very nasty disease. Kids are the ones that get infected with it through bite wounds. And yeah, so they die. It's a lethal disease. That's the problem. So there is no treatment. There are a few treatments that have had some success in the last years, but it's a highly lethal disease in humans.
So definitely get your pets vaccinated for rabies. It's not just us wanting money. They really need to be vaccinated for rabies. So we were talking before we came on the podcast about different oddities in animals, and like I was telling you that we had gone to the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, and there was the cow with two heads and the foal with like an extra leg, or you know, stuff like that. Have you seen stuff like that in your career?
Yes. When I was in Chile, I was an assistant professor at the university in Valdivia, Universidad Austral, and I was a curator for one exhibition of animals with malformation and parasites. Mm-hmm. A colleague and I, we started that exhibition. It was an old exhibition, actually. So what we did was that we restored some old specimens that were abandoned in a storage room. So we grabbed those. We actually made a whole historical review. So we found actually the articles where these specimens were published. We talked to a professor that was retiring, and he was the TA of those professors because that was a collection that started in the late 40s, early 50s. So we were able to recreate them, and we had so many animals. Yeah, there were most of them, like cows with two heads. We had, it was not a calf, it was a sheep that had like seven legs. We had two cyclopes, but before I arrived there, so I arrived to Chile in 2010, and probably the project started like a year after. So like 10 years before, someone entered into this storage room and tried to steal some of these specimens. I don't know why, so probably they wanted to have them like in the room or somewhere. So we had two heads that were cyclopes, actual cyclopes. So one eye in the center of the head, and these are very peculiar because they don't have nose. So they have this really weird mouth.
Almost like a human face, the ones I've seen pictures of. They're creepy.
Yeah, it's very creepy. But the thing is that they went running. Someone seems to have seen them. So they were escaping, and then one of those heads got stolen, but the other one was left behind. But there was one eye that was, I mean, only one eye, right? And the recreation had actually like a glass eye, but it got missing. So when we got it, there was no eye. And I asked one of the technicians from the anatomy if there was a possibility, you know, like to get an eye. And he said, yeah, sure. But it was so hard to find just one eye because they sell them in pairs, right? So we had this firm, small firm in Germany, and they sent us a couple of eyes. So we were treated. And yeah, so it was lots of fun trying to restore all those animals. And it was an open exhibition for everyone in the city. So we got lots of schools that were visiting, tourists. So I had, and I was the one, you know, like me and my friend, my colleague, the parasitologist, she was the one also giving tours to people. So it was fun. I met so many people. It was really cool. It was itinerant too. So it got to see other cities.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah, I bet you had people from all over the place come in to see them too.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. It was a really fun activity. So it kept me busy for a while, and it was fun. And then we created this whole, you know, like design for this room. We had like little postcards the kids could actually draw which one of them was their favorite. So yeah, we had lots of activities.
Oh, I bet that was some terrifying artwork too, because you know how kids will draw little things, little sick people, families, and it's so creepy. And I'm just trying to picture a little kid drawing a one-eyed cyclops calf with like a people face. That's terrifying.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun because, it was a great opportunity for us to teach about, you know, diseases in general. And also everyone was freaked out at first when we were inviting all these schools, like, oh my God, they are going to be scared. And kids do not get that scared that easily. So they think it's okay, it's different. But if you give them the context, then it's super good to talk about, you know, diversity and talk about, you know, other things. That not everyone is the same, that some people, so we had a lot of people with different capacities visiting also. So that was amazing because they could see, oh, it's not just me and my colleagues or my friends. There are some special things happening in the animal world. So that was also amazing.
And I know I personally related more to animals than I did to people growing up. So how cool for a kid to go, okay, well, not only are all people different, but animals are all different too. So that's fascinating. So did you have a favorite exhibition?
One of my favorite specimens is called an Amorphus globosus. So it's basically a little ball of fur. So that is basically born attached to a normal calf. And it's supposed, so at an early stage when the egg, the sperm are developing, you know, a whole organism, there is something happening that will develop a whole calf, but there you have this extra tissue that is alive while it's inside the uterus because it's connected to the placenta. So it has its umbilical cord and it's usually covered by fur, so skin with hair. But inside you can find muscle or, you know, like tooth or a hair. Once the calf is born, then you see this other extra umbilical cord, and then you see this ball. It's like a little creature. It's like a little creature, right?
I love them. I've never heard of that.
Then you get to preserve it. And it's just this, we had two of them actually. So it was just this fur that is it's a little ball, you know, like really round with a little area where the umbilical cord goes, and it's furry. It's really nice.
Did they have patterns like cow patterns, or were they like a solid color?
Actually, it's like skin. So one of the ones that, one of them was, you know, like you could see that it was basically cow fur or cow skin. So you get to see like the different parts, and it was like white and brown, and the other one was completely brown and a little bit of black. So yeah, you get to see the part.
They're so cute. Oh my gosh, I love them. Whenever I think of little balls of fur, I think of my Pomeranian. So I'm thinking little Pomeranian cows. I have a new favorite thing now. Thanks. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we know that cyclopses are real, and we know that little cow blobs are real. What about giants? Have you ever seen anything like abnormally large?
I haven't seen anything abnormally large, but I visited a few museums, especially the one in Edinburgh, that is an anatomic pathology museum for humans. And there they have, it's the Hunter's Museum. And then they have this skeleton from a human giant that lived in the late 1700s. So that's the closest I have got into a giant. I have never seen a giant animal, but I know that there are dogs that do present a disease that basically makes them grow and grow and grow. But in humans, it's the same. So that was very, very impressive. But yeah, no, I haven't been close to a giant.
What about anything abnormally small, like little teeny tiny?
Yeah, so sometimes you do get animals that also, again, they do have like a background disease, right? So what they have is called achondroplasia. So basically their bones are not, the long bones are not growing normally. So they are like little animal. So it was this little calf that was, do you remember like Lilo and Stitch?
Yes.
The calves look like Stitch basically. So they have this bulldog face. So they kind of, they are like a bulldog. They are like very short leg, but they have this thick abdomen and these large heads. So yeah, those are the little ones that I can remember.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy IRL is an exciting podcast from the hearts, minds, and mouths of Shannon Gregoire, Tatiana Rogers, and Lexi Rodriguez. The show celebrates inspirational role models and focuses on empowerment and equality. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
Halloween is more of an American type holiday. So surely you celebrate the creepy and wonderful and weird somehow. What do you do?
Because I'm coming from Chile, right? So I was raised and lived there for many years. Then I left to the US for a while, Germany, and then back to Chile. And now I live in the Caribbean. So again, in South America and here in the Caribbean, Halloween is kind of a thing that you get to see in the movies. So we don't relate to that. So in Chile, our Halloween is basically for the night of San Juan. So San Juan is a specific day in the year. It's also in, I don't remember if it is in November too. And that's when you get to celebrate all these, you know, like magical stuff. And that's the day where the witches go out. That's the day where the devil goes around. And when I was raised, my grandparents were always talking about all these, you know, like traditional stuff and traditional tales. And that's where you get all these stories about witchcraft and that's the day that if you are in love, you perform a specific ritual and then you will get the love of your life and those things. And here in the Caribbean, for many years, Halloween, at least here in St. Kitts and Nevis, it was seen as, like a witchcraft thing. So it was not really kind of allowed because also it conflicts with religion. So at some point it was a little bit of an outlier celebration. But nowadays everyone is celebrating it. So
sure. It's becoming more and more accepted, I feel. And I know just here in the States, which we're in the deep South, a lot of the churches, they're like, no, that's the devil's holiday. So they'll have, instead of trick or treat, they'll have trunk or treat, where it's all the church people, and they'll set up their trunks and their cars with candy. And I'm like, no, I want witches and monsters, please. But I will take some of that candy too.
Yeah, but I think every culture has its celebration somehow. Like I've seen it in Africa, I've seen it in Europe. So I think it depends on the culture, how we deal, with the things that we cannot explain, and we assign it a day and we celebrate it, or we are just afraid and run away and hide.
Sure. Yeah, that's very true. And it's, like I said, I feel like it's becoming more and more accepted, which is great because it's so fun. I love creepy, weird, scary, in quotes, stuff. I love it. So movie monsters, do you have a favorite movie monster? Was there a thing that just freaked you out when you were a kid or now?
I am not a fan of, these really scary movies, but I do like a monster style terror horror movie, right? So I would say that probably when I was a kid, the critters were something that were, but those are kind of alien, right? So, but those were like, wow, I couldn't even see the announcement on the TV. So that was freaking me out. And then I think one of my favorites probably are the Yeti Bigfoot stories. So there is now, I haven't read it, but my husband did. There is one book now out for a couple of years about the Bigfoot. And yeah, I mean, I relate more to those stories. So I think that's kind of my favorite.
Yeah, Yeti and Bigfoot is a big one, a big one like a Bigfoot that we have. And there's Yeti-like or Bigfoot-like creatures all across the world. I mean, there's sightings everywhere. So it's not, I don't believe it's unreasonable to think there's an undiscovered large ape. I think so. What do you think? With your science brain, what do you think?
My science brain sometimes is super boring. So sometimes I just turn it off and say, you should believe in something cool. My science brain, you asked me, Caitlin. So my science brain says, no, there is no creature that we haven't seen that is this large. But my other brain says, why not? I mean, we still get to discover new species every day. Probably these are areas that have been unexplored and could be. So let's leave it that, why not? I mean, we are talking about a Halloween special, right? So
it's the Halloween special. Bigfoot's real. We have a client and they're so cute. The husband is obsessed with Bigfoot. So you can always tell when they're pulling up in the driveway because he's got Bigfoot stickers all over the back of his truck. And their house, I didn't know it was their house until recently, but they have like a Bigfoot silhouette cutout and they have a Bigfoot statue. Like, he is obsessed with Bigfoot. And I think it's so sweet.
Of course. Why not? If it is not, religion, then you can have Bigfoot. Right.
So no Sasquatch, no Bigfoot, which lame. Agree to disagree, but that's okay. So pathologists, which I know you do more like tissue and stuff, but blood sucking creatures like vampires. What about vampires and werewolves and cool?
Yeah, I love vampires. Vampires are cool. I love the actual animals, but I love the history behind vampires and the stories about vampires. There are so many old movies about vampires. Have you ever watched them? Oh my God. The first time I saw Nosferatu, it was this old probably, I don't know, I was like probably 8 years old or 7 years old, and I was hiding in my grandma's house, and I could see, you know, like the TV and everything. And there was this Nosferatu that was very creepy, like bold and, you know, like wide with these long nails and long, you know, very pointed teeth. And it was, I saw the movie a couple of years ago, and it's, yeah, but I saw the movie a couple of years ago, and it was not creepy. It was like lame.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen it recently either, but I know there's one point, and I don't know if it was that one or if it was another vampire movie where the vampire moves, and as an adult, it's obvious the guy was just on skates and they pushed him, you know, because he just glides across. But I remember that freaking me out so bad because that guy, like, he didn't move when he was walking. He just slid. I was like, oh, nope, don't like that.
Yeah, so I love vampire movies, but I like the old ones. So all the new movies, I find them, they are more on the romantic side. So I don't like that too much. So. Yeah, I love vampires, and vampires, well, they are real. So there are real animals called vampires. So these are kind of vampire bats, and they are cool. So they live actually on sucking blood. Yeah, they don't suck blood on people. So usually they go and feed on cattle, and they live in South America. So I haven't seen one like live, but I know that in the north part of Chile, there are some vampire bats, in Argentina, in Brazil also, in Mexico. And there are some species living in India too. But yeah, I think it's really, really cool that some animals can only live on blood, and that is called hematophagy. So they just live on blood.
So strictly blood, nothing, they don't eat fruits, nothing else, strictly blood. And they get everything they need just from that?
It seems so, yeah.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Vet Candy makes learning fun with the most fascinating people on our planet. Our entertaining, continuing education programs are made for your streaming world. Fabulous, fun, and free. Available on demand, anywhere, and anytime. Don't miss out. Subscribe today on iTunes, YouTube, or a platform of your choice. Or visit myvetcandy.com for more information.
So vampires are real. Cyclopses are real. The jury's still out on Bigfoot, but we've got two.
But we agreed on the other two, right?
We agree. Yeah, no, we got this. We got this. Speaking of bloodsuckers, have you heard of the chupacabra?
I have heard of the chupacabra. I haven't heard of the chupacabra here in the Caribbean. So it's probably more a Latin American related thing. So more related to the Spanish language and well, in Chile, when I was a student, I remember that there was this case of the chupacabra, and they brought a specimen into the pathology lab there. And the pathologist at my university was the one doing or performing an autopsy on the supposedly chupacabra. And at the end, it was just an aborted fetus from some kind of, yeah, I think it was like a goat, and it was kind of mummified and yeah, that was it. And later on, when I was living in Chile a few years ago, we had also like several cases of chupacabra, but it was basically because there we have an invasive species, which is a mink. And the minks actually attack small areas where you can have like small calves or a chicken, and they do not eat like the whole animal. So they just attack, they bite their necks, and they just leave them there. So sometimes they could be like really, really damaging. So if you have like a chicken pen, they can just get in there, kill all the chickens, eat the eggs, and then they leave.
Oh, and minks are so cute. I can't imagine them doing bad. Yeah, I can imagine them doing bad things because I've had ferrets and they're bad. So.
Yeah, but who knows? Probably there is a chupacabra there going and, you know, walking around. You never know. A coyote killing goats. killing, chickens,
poor chickens. Yeah, a lot of the chupacabra sightings I was reading where they had, you know, somebody, I think it was in Texas, found a chupacabra and they froze it. They put it in like a big plastic tub, like a moving tub, and they shipped it out. And it turned out to be a coyote. It had really bad sarcoptic mange, and it did look like a monster, but it was kind of cool. I mean, it was sad, but it was like, oh yeah, I can definitely see where somebody would think that's some kind of a monster.
Because animals with mange are very, very ugly.
Yeah. Have you ever seen I've only seen pictures. I haven't seen one in real life, but a bear with mange, like a hairless bear.
I have seen pictures only. Yeah. Yeah.
They're terrifying.
Yeah. Because you always have that image of animals with fur. So when you remove the fur, or when you have like hairless animals, they look a little bit different to what your brain is used to, right? So yeah.
And then there's also the Patagonian Mara, which was, someone thought it was a chupacabra, but all that is it's like a big guinea pig, kind of. And they're so cute.
They are very cute. I have only seen them like in zoo exhibitions. There are Maras, in Argentina, in Peru, but it's like a big rodent. So it depends on the side. Like it could be super cute, or it could be like a big, big rat, but I prefer to think of them as a big, cute rodent. Yeah.
So they are. They almost look like bunny squirrels with hooves. They're so strange looking. I love them.
Yeah, they're cute.
They're so cute. Much cuter than the poor little chupacabras.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Poor little chupacabras. So I know you've done invasive species studies like underwater and with coral and stuff like that. What do you think of creatures of the deep? Do you think it's possible for things like Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster, Ogopogo, megalodons?
Absolutely. I visited the Loch Ness a few years ago. We didn't see anything. I waited and waited and waited. We didn't see anything. I mean, when you think about the survival of a species alone in a lake, it doesn't seem very logical, right? But probably, I mean, who knows? There is something else living in there, some big fish, some snakes, or something that people could relate to. I love deep creatures, like deep water creatures, because, I mean, you never know. The ocean is like a whole new different world. There are like very, very scary fish. I don't know if you have seen like scorpion fish or even the lionfish. So I do a lot of studies on lionfish. They are just beautiful. But if you think about, you know, what they do, they're creepy. I mean, they can eat everything and anything. They can lay like 2 million of eggs per year. So when you think about that, that sounds really creepy. They can overtake the sea if they plan to. So, yeah.
And their spines, are they venomous or poisonous?
They're venomous. So no, they are not poisonous. So fortunately, you can eat the lionfish. So that is one of the things we are promoting here with our project. So we are trying to promote the consumption of lionfish in order to decrease the problem that they induce in the reefs.
I know I was listening to an interview with Jimmy Buffett, and one of Jimmy Buffett's restaurants is serving lionfish. I thought, well, that's so cool.
Yeah, and it's great. It's very delicious. You can prepare it in so many different ways. So, yeah.
Does it have a distinct taste, or is it just a good yummy fish?
It is a good yummy fish. It has this very white flesh and it's kind of firm. So usually you can prepare it. So we have done ceviche, we have done it, you know, like pan sealed, we have done in a grilled in the oven. I mean, it's very versatile. And I think here with all the Caribbean species, that is something that we can absolutely try to promote and start, you know, eating. Absolutely.
Sure. I remember seeing them at, I believe it was the New Orleans Aquarium. And I thought they were just so pretty. I was like, they're so neat with their spines and their colors. They're just gorgeous. And they're swimming against this dark blue background. It was just so pretty. And my mom walks up and goes, "That's the ugliest damn fish I've ever seen." I'm like, "Mom, get out. You don't appreciate this. Leave."
But they are gorgeous. Like when they are swimming, we see them around and they are just so pretty.
If Nessie's real, which I hope she is, but if she's real, do you think it's more likely that it's just a, I know one of the theories is that it's a giant eel because there's a lot of eels in the lock. Or do you think more like a pliosaur?
Again, my logical brain talking, I think it could be an eel. What is it with the cameras and the new videos? I mean, I can explain that nobody could take a picture of Nessie or the Sasquatch in the 40s or 50s or even in the 90s. But nowadays, I mean, with all, you know, like the drones and new technologies, I mean, everyone has a cell phone, right? So why cannot we take a picture? A decent one, right? So that's the only thing that makes me think,
But then we only just recently discovered the coelacanth and the giant squid.
There you have. Yeah, probably it's a thing of, giving it a little bit time and technology to discover them. I mean, there are some areas in the loch where you cannot actually see how deep it is. So they do have these sonars where they can actually tell you how deep is the lake surface. And there are some areas that are really, really deep. So yeah, who knows? Probably they are around there hiding.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Julio Alonso. Do you want to keep up with everything Vet Med? Then check out my show on Vet Candy TV. We talk about clinical updates, science news, plus some of the coolest people in our profession. Stream at My Vet Candy 24/7 on YouTube, iTunes, and most other video platforms.
I like that. That's awesome. So I really hope that there is a Nessie, and I want to see it. I want to be the one that gets the real good picture, but you know.
Bring your cell phone.
always. I'm always ready. Nessie, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, I'm coming for you. I'm ready. I got this. Where you are, do you have like a regional legendary animal, creature, monster?
That I would like to see or that is kind of my favorite?
Just any kind of like legend. Do you have any kind of like legendary creatures?
Yeah, that is interesting. I never thought about that question. That is a hard question, Caitlin. No, but I was thinking, probably I don't have like a favorite mythological, like ugly, because when I think of a mythological, it's probably like a Pegasus or, you know, a unicorn, because I have two little kids. So the first image I have is the unicorns and, you know, like, sparkles and rainbows because my life has turned into a unicorn theme.
Sure. Well, what about a unicorn? Could a horse or a cute little white goat or something have some kind of keratin growth on their forehead that would look like a horn?
I think there could be kind of a malformation in some species, but not horses. So there is this disease in rabbits. Have you heard of it? It's called the fibroma. And it's basically a viral disease that induces all these horny projections and growth, uncontrolled growth in the, it's usually kind of the face of the rabbits. So they were relating it to some, you know, mythological creatures because they look really weird, you know, like a horned rabbit. So, yeah.
Do you think that's where the jackalope came from or is that something totally different?
Probably. No, I think probably it's coming from that fibroma. So
I want all of our listeners and you as well, Dr. Maria, to know how hard it was for me not to interrupt you and make a joke about horny projections. So that's a win for me.
That is a special brain that makes all those.
It takes a special person to make corny projections. What can I say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Why not?
Horned projections. I mean, whatever. This is great. Do you have any like neat organ stories? Like, is there a time where you were looking at a body and you found something really cool in the organs, like parasites or?
Yeah, I have so many stories about that, Caitlin. I am old, I have done so many autopsies in so many different animals, but I think I have found things that are not basically creepy, but that have surprised me. So what creeps me out on an autopsy are, parasites. So coming from Chile, we don't have heartworm disease there. So one of the things I have seen here in the Caribbean is a lot of heartworms. Yeah, we have several island dogs that do not get the treatment. So that's where we get these cases from. It was very impressive the first time I saw it. So my students in Chile that were coming from Colombia or from other countries were telling me, you know, all the stories about these autopsies where you can actually see the worms alive inside the heart. And I was like, no, come on. And they were like, yeah. So the first thing I did was, okay, they told me there is a case, probably it's a heartworm disease. And I was like, okay, I will handle it, you know. But then I opened the heart and there they were, lots of worms inside the heart. They were alive and creeping out, you know, like via to the lungs. And that was very, very impressive for me.
Isn't it? My husband described them as like heart noodles or something like that.
I know. I try not to make food comparison because my students then will not eat spaghetti for a year. But I'm always doing those comparisons, like currant jelly or chicken fat, you know, whatever. But they actually look like, you know, a Chinese noodle. So
yeah, like an Asian, well, not an Asian, an angel hair pasta. It's a very thin. Yeah. And see, I'm the opposite. I can talk about that kind of stuff and be like, ooh, I want to go get some pho now, because that's what heartworms look like. They look like the pho noodles. But bones, for some reason, I love bones. I think bones are really, really cool. I could look at them all day. But for some reason, seeing bones makes me not want to eat. I'm just kind of like, oh, no, I don't want to eat anymore. So like chicken with bones, my mom makes fun of me because I'm a grown-ass woman. And she's like, are you not going to eat the chicken because it has bones in it? I'm like, no, Mom, I don't want to eat it. It's got bones in it.
Everyone has its soft spot, right?
Do you get to examine bone or do you focus more on, will you focus more on like the tissue and the organs?
Yeah, everything. So we do get actually in every single routine autopsy, we actually take the femur out and we examine the bone marrow. So where we will have to break it. So basically we make a cut and then we look at the bone marrow inside. So we do check everything. And if there is a special like indication or a special pathology or disease that is affecting the muscle or the bones, we take a special look at it. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember we did a leg amputation on a dog with an osteosarcoma in his leg, and the doctor, the bone, it was like sponge almost. It was so porous. It was really cool. You know, if it wasn't someone's beloved family member, it would have just been the coolest thing ever, you know. But she took the bone and she was able to cut it with a scalpel. It was so soft. Do you see stuff like that?
Osteosarcomas are impressive. Of course, it depends on the location, but you get all these malformations or growths, and sometimes they can just be huge. Yeah, no, it's very, very interesting.
It is. I don't ever want it to happen to one of my dogs, but it was really cool to watch. Yeah, it was really cool. I know when they do like an ACL surgery, or, you know, where they have the leg tied up and they've got it all wrapped and they shave it. And I always look and go, oh, I want a turkey leg real bad.
I get from time to time some comments when we are doing or performing an autopsy on a cow. It's like, oh my God, that looks like a really good beef. And I'm like, really? I mean,
like, hey, can I have that piece? Right.
You know, like, yeah, I can, you know, like imagine this like on the grill. And I'm like, no, come on. It's not the moment.
Well, probably by the time you get them, they've probably been dead a few days, or is it pretty quick?
Yeah, it depends. So it depends. Sometimes we get like very fresh cases, and sometimes we get these really, really scary cases when they are, yeah, I don't know if I can say that, but they are all green and yeah, smelly and, you know, bloated and ugly.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Shay, and I want to tell you about my new show on Pet Candy, Cooking with Shay. I make vegan eating easy and fun. Check it out on Pet Candy TV.
Yeah, but I do it because I like it. And to a certain point, I mean, I also get disgusted. It's not like everything for me is like just flowers and, you know, yeah. So there are some cases where I have performed an autopsy and then I'm like, oh no, this is too bad. This is too smelly or gross. We had a case and we were talking with my text the other day about this dog that came in, and I could remember perfectly, probably was a year ago. It was a huge dog. And they told me, yeah, it's just arrived. And there was this big black bag and I opened it and there were ticks everywhere, thousands of them like creeping out of the bag. And I looked in there and we were like, oh my God, what should we do? So we took it out and it was just full with ticks. So that is basically my nightmare. So if I ever think of a terror movie, that would be it. I mean, that is the only living creature besides some politicians that I hate. But that was for me like, oh my God, this is a no-go. The animal was in a very, very bad condition. And yeah, so we had to stop there because if not, we were going, it was really bad.
Oh gosh, it's like in the scary movies where the eye pops out and then like bugs come out of the eyes. And
yeah, like Indiana Jones type of.
That was one of my first childhood crushes was Indiana Jones.
Absolutely. Mine too. No, we share that. Yeah, absolutely.
My husband he works for a pet crematory. So he goes to the clinics and he picks up the bodies and, you know, he takes them back and sometimes he cremates them. And he's told me some horror stories of just some nasty bodies. And there's some clinics that still don't have a freezer. And I'm like, how do you have a vet clinic and not have a freezer? Because inevitably something's going to die, unfortunately. And some days he comes home and I go to hug him and give him a kiss. He's like, I need a shower. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And the smell kind of sticks and it's weird.
Oh, sure. It's like that nasty cast smell when you take off a cast and the foot's been wet, nasty. And even though you're like strict cage confinement, they're like, oh, well, he was sad. So I let him go run around in the pond 4 days ago. So now his little foot's fallen off and it stinks.
Yeah. No, so it could be bad. So yeah, I can relate there.
Is there a certain smell that you're like, nope, can't stand that?
Human-related smells. Like if I can smell, like sometimes when you go on the streets and you can smell that a human has been, you know, doing toilet things around. And then I'm like, oh no, I cannot stand it. It's like, yeah. So human-related poop, pees, that goes over me. I cannot.
How are people so much grosser than animals? We had, and I said, you know, I'm the desk winch, so I sit at the front desk. So the way our lobby's positioned, people always stop at my desk, which is fine. But I'm a big chubby girl, so I got a fan on. So if someone stinks, it's blowing it into my face. And today I had them back to back people that smoke a lot. And I'm just real, my allergies are real sensitive. So I'm just like, oh, this is so bad. And then the next person had just straight up mothball. And my coworker was like, I could smell them too. I was like, this is horrible. Like, please give me some anal glands or something. Like, this is awful. And then more smoke.
Yeah, I'm also like super sensitive to smells. And I don't know what is going on with me when I'm in the autopsy floor, but something or somehow I manage to block those smells that are too bad, but at to a certain degree, right? If it is too smelly or too ugly, I get to realize, okay, this is a very bad smell. But if not, usually it doesn't bother me. And I use the smell as an extra sense, right? So if we are, for example, doing an autopsy on a cow, then you have to use your smell to figure out if the, you know, like the feed, it's okay. And it has a specific smell. So if it is like too, you know, too acid or too cetonic, we kind of perceive that too. And that is very helpful for the whole diagnosis.
Oh, that's true. I never thought of that. So there's veterinary autopsy technicians?
Yes.
Like specifically? That's really cool.
Yes, yes. So I have two wonderful technicians, Candida and Maurice, and they are amazing. Both of them studied in Jamaica. Their background is usually like pathology or forensic medicine or forensic sciences. So yeah, and they are amazing. They just rock in the necropsy floor.
That's, I've only got to watch, which we don't really do them here. It's mostly, you know, we would send them off to one of the universities if someone really wants a necropsy. But the ones I have seen have been so cool. I was like over the doctor's shoulder, like, oh, what's that? What's that? What's that? That's so cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you get, you know, like a whole new perspective on the animals. And it's also interesting to teach that to students because they have a complete different view of the organs and of the processes. We teach them in lectures, but once you get to go and see an actual autopsy, it's amazing. I mean, they feel also like empowered to do things because the animal is already dead. So they are not basically, if something happens, they don't freak out, you know, like, so it's kind of a good practice for them too.
That's true. I imagine one of the things about surgery, I would be so worried, oh, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to kill this person's pet. But like you said, if it's already gone, I mean, we can learn from it and you don't have that worry of, oh, I'm going to kill it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have that pressure, but you have the pressure of the respect that you owe to that body, right? So, I mean, we always do it in a very respectful way and we are all there to learn from this case. So, yeah, and it's a great learning process, I think, for students to get to see what we do and teach them in the theoretical lectures.
Absolutely. Well, I know as a pet owner, I'm very grateful for what you do because you may find something that could save my precious little, what are they called? The little cow balls?
Amorphous globosus. I'm going to send you those links. I actually have like, they made this small documentary and my husband told me that it was the most creepiest thing ever because I was talking and then I was like doing like a small massage to this little furry ball.
How do you, you're like Dr. Evil with the cat, but it's the amorphous thing.
He told me, have you realized what you did? And I'm like, no.
How do you not pet it? Come on, it's a little cow ball.
Yeah, so I was treating it like very softly, of course. So yeah, I can, that is online, so I can show you that was that movie.
I'm living for that. That's amazing.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Put the needle on the record.
Vet Candy Life is a talk show hosted by well-being gurus Dr. Quincy Hawley and Renee Michelle. Each episode features expert tips, lifestyle advice, and real-life experiences from the most interesting people in the world. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more.
Okay, well, my beloved listeners, if you want to learn more about little amorphous cow blobs or any of the really cool things that Dr. Maria has talked about today, how can my listeners get in touch with you or where can they, what are your social links?
So I have a LinkedIn and yeah, that's it. So I do have a Facebook and Instagram, but I do not update them very often. But LinkedIn would be the thing to contact me.
Sure. And on LinkedIn, it's your full name, right? It's the Maria Jose Navarrete Taloni.
There you go. Very good.
I did it. Guys, I'm almost bilingual. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. And such a long name. You did it great.
It's a beautiful name, though. It really is. All right, my listeners. Well, this has been so much fun, and I hope you have a spooktacular Halloween or however you, or fall harvest or whatever you do. Just have fun with it. So this has been a fantastic show. Thank you so much for joining me, and thanks for listening. I love sharing these stories with you. If you enjoyed the show, please hit that subscribe button. You can always find me on Vet Candy and TikTok at Desk Wench, DeskWench. Send me your crazy stories to thedeskwench@gmail.com. Until next time, make it a great day.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.